passion, drive, and patience. What brings home the winning trophy is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. From superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED lights, and more, whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to turn your car into the MVP and bring home that win. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
When Ryan's when it's time to begin, it's on the Rewind Around with John Pollock and Waiting the A-Team that makes sense of these things we see in the ring every week on TV. It's Rewind Around for Monday night, download a Tuesday morning from the Post Wrestling site. It's Rewind Around for Monday night on USA Now on the John and Wade take the mic.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Rewind to Raw. It is a brand new week here at Post Wrestling, and kicking things off, it is Rewind to Raw, typically the biggest ask I have of any guest co-host of a given week. And doing the honors this week, you know him, you love him, former WWE writer, a longtime member of the extended Post Wrestling family, Brian Mann is here with us. Brian, how are you?
I'm great. I spent my evening very well. I appreciate you having me on. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you for stepping in to do this with us, because Raw's not always the easiest one, but it's coming at an interesting time, I think, in WWE's entire history. So that was part of the interest of having you on to chat about all of these recent changes, and we will see how they are playing themselves out. But I want to welcome everyone that is joining us live in the chat room. We will be getting to your feedback later on. If you want to throw in your super chats, you can do so. Just some quick notes here at the site. Coming up this week on the Post Wrestling Cafe, we have three G1 shows beginning on Tuesday. I will be with Bruce Lord. Then Wednesday, Mike Murray is joining me. And Sunday, Karen Peterson for a double shot of the G1 Climax reviews. We've also got MCU Later returning on Thursday night with WH Park, Rich Fan from the Pro Wrestling Torch site, and John Cena. So in full effect this week on the Post Wrestling Cafe. We also have other shows that are going to be dropping, including all of our regular ones. And you can check those out at postwrestling.com. But how have you been, Brian? How has life been? And what have you been up to?
Oh, I think life's been pretty great. Pretty, you know, it's a weird time for the world, but I'm pretty happy with how it's treating me personally. I haven't really been, I got to be honest, haven't been watching much of WWE lately. Mm-hmm. So this was, you know, this was new for me. Obviously, I mean, the last time we would have spoken was it the day that Vince announced that he was like there? It was the investigation. Was that, or that he was stepping away? I think we did a show the day he was stepping away.
Right. Yeah. I'm trying to remember if it was the first. I think it was the initial one. Right when it was like the first Wall Street Journal story. So that would have been like mid June.
Right. And they're like, oh, he'll be on SmackDown tonight. And I remember I predicted
yes,
this could be the last time we see him on WWE TV. I was off by two appearances. But I wasn't so far off. I mean, that's the thing that's been the craziest about this is that obviously we can say the thing with Steph when she came out and they chanted, thank you, Vince, was a little weird. The weirder thing to me was the fact that they did not even put an image of him on screen. And they were in the garden 4 days later and they're like, no, sweep this under the rug, get this out of here as quickly as you can. It is wild to think that Vince McMahon retires from WWE and they don't even put his picture on screen. It really shows you the gravity of the situation.
It really does. I mean, it makes you see that just the fact that they felt secure enough to send Stephanie out there and clearly did not have that same confidence by Monday, that other than the Roman Reigns and Paul Heyman, you know, allusions to Vince very subtly, like Vince feels like it's just a subject we are not going to address in any way publicly. They will, you know, put over Vince and his contributions, but it's very much limited to that. Like they are not going to, they are not going to glorify this figure on their own broadcast. And it was something to see that first Raw, the show he's going to be most associated with, and his actual name was never mentioned the week after he walks out. And I cannot say it's the wrong call that they're making either. I think that this is very much positioning this is the new WWE, and it's a post Vince world that they are moving through. And once they got through that first day where the stock took ill effect, it's like there's optimism about a sale. There's optimism on many fronts. Vince was not this anchor. His exit, at least, wasn't that they probably always thought would be the case.
Well, and honestly, I think that a little bit of that, you know, only Vince can do this, I think it was a little bit of, you know, myth making that he put out there. And I think that over the last couple of years, obviously we have no proof of this, but if I had to predict, I think that his instability has probably been very clear to people on the inside. And I think that if you are a member of that board, or maybe if you are talking to high up investors, I think maybe they let people know that this is not going to be an issue. This is actually for the best, getting Vince out of here. The whole thing's not going to come tumbling down. I think that we've seen over the last couple of years, there's been a lot of very erratic decision making. And I think that, I don't know, it's such an interesting situation because it is twofold. And I think with Vince not going out there, that first or that final night when Steph went out and then not showing his photo, I have to say that feels like that was maybe more of a network decision of we don't want him seen. And then once this stuff comes out about the SEC investigation, where it's like, okay, no, this company cannot have any connection to this guy, because now there are much larger implications of that. It isn't simply who we would love, like, is Vince still the puppet master? No, he cannot have contact with these people because of ongoing federal investigations. It's a very different, this is more than just a PR view now.
So if you are looking at this as kind of the Vince McMahon farewell story, okay, if this were a documentary, what chapter are we on when it comes to Vince McMahon? Are we right at the end, or are there chapters to come?
I think it really depends on how this investigation goes. You know, I don't think he's going to get out free and clear, but I also don't know if he's necessarily going to go on trial. I don't think it'll go that far, but maybe he gets hit with a penalty. Maybe there's some sort of, you know, I don't know what sort of penalty they can throw his way. I think he's out of the company for good. I don't think they can bring him back after this.
How about his career options beyond WWE? I mean, the guy is turning 77 in just a few weeks, right? And I mean, he is loaded with capital if he will be received in the business community. I mean, he is coming off a pretty public, I would say a pretty damaging end with the XFL, and then this is compounded on top of that. So his name is probably the most damaged we have seen it. In our lifetime at this point, and that does cover a lot of ground, but the combination of those, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know what he can do. I think the XFL and everything that happened with Oliver North is very, if you are a high up figure, I think that you're not wanting to get into business with this guy. You know, I just don't see what's next for him. I don't know what he would want to do. I don't know who would want to do it with him. I think it's just collecting a lot of money and remaining private. Maybe in a couple of years, the company tries to bring him back with a Hall of Fame induction or something in 5 or 10 years. Maybe. I highly doubt it. But listen,
I think it's a very small chance at this point. Yeah. I mean, sometimes it's very difficult. Like we are in the midst of a controversy, of a scenario, and it just looks like the point of no return. And sometimes the public has very very short memories when it comes to that, of figures that they find very endearing. And a year from now, Maybe the stink on Vince is not going to be what it is now, but it's very hard to imagine that. As I say all of this about like this Vince McMahon story, it's like if you had a documentary that Netflix had been working on, this is like an actual hell of an ending to it. If you were to actually be going through with that, unfortunately, it looks like this Netflix documentary that they had been spending all of this time and money on probably not going to see the light of day if the reporting out there is correct.
Right. Well, it sounds like with that documentary, most likely WWE had some form of final cut, something along the lines of, well, we won't allow you to use the footage. Like we won't actually sign the releases until we approve of what it is. So I think that's probably where it's at right now, is that even if Netflix, I just don't see why WWE would want that out there.
Oh, they wouldn't. I mean, that's the reality, Brian, of so many of these big documentary projects, is that you want these large figures involved in order for them to sit down with you and share that story. Like they want to have that certain element of control on it, whether it's a Michael Jordan figure or Derek Jeter. I mean, that's just the reality of a lot of these big, these documentary projects, and that's going to be the level of control you give up when you're working with a WWE.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think it's probably fair to assume that what we saw at WrestleMania this past year with Pat McAfee was maybe going to be the end of that documentary of, you know, look at this guy, still 77 out there in the ring, WrestleMania, his greatest creation. And then all this happens. And, you know, I've said it with other figures, and I think it goes true with Vince McMahon. A lot of these older figures, they've just got to know when to hang it up. If Vince McMahon 5 years ago had said, hey, putting Hunter in charge, going to go off into the sunset, WWE would have dedicated a year to this guy's swan song. It would have been a countdown constantly. He could have gone to the Hall of Fame. He would have gotten all the fanfare, and he would have rode off like a hero.
Were you not there when were you there when they did the in-ring kind of farewell of Vince with Hunter and the tears are flowing? Like, they did pretty much the passing of the torch segment, and this was 2011.
That was pretty much, if I'm not mistaken, I think that was maybe a week before I started. I started at SummerSlam 2011, and part of the intrigue of that story for everyone that was backstage was pretty much, hey, this is what's going to happen. Hunter's going to take over, and we're kind of telling that story in real time. It never ended up going anywhere. Unfortunately, it sort of, you know, fell apart because Vince lost interest in it, as what happens with most stories. But yeah, that was the idea. And I kept hearing from people that were still there, like, yep, Hunter's taken over. Next year, this is supposed to be Vince's last Mania. This is Vince's last Mania. Until we saw everything that happened with him and Hunter over the last couple of years. I kind of would always say this. This isn't based off anything I heard, but if Hunter was anyone other than his son-in-law, Vince would have fired him years ago, because that's just what he does. We've seen him do this over and over again. Anyone that starts to kind of threaten his power inside the company, or maybe is a little more popular than him, he gets rid of them. He gets rid of people that he sees as a threat. And Hunter was just one person he couldn't get rid of.
Well, one person that it looks like has been removed is John Laurinaitis. PWInsider.com was the first to report today that it appears that Laurinaitis is gone. And I think everyone saw that as a formality after he was put on administrative leave. And you had Bruce Pritchard put in that position in an interim basis, and then Paul Levesque taking it over. So no surprises there with John Laurinaitis. And that seems to be one that, I mean, that was about as slam dunk a conclusion as one was going to see coming out of the story. It was just a matter of when.
Exactly. I think if I had seen somewhere this, they pretty much, the corporate kind of investigation had to run its course before they could officially terminate him. So I'm assuming that maybe at least as far as it pertains to him, it's concluded. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I think I would just say wait until the report comes out and everything that we hear. But listen, you know, Vince had a circle. You know, that's kind of what you can say.
Yeah, the the conclusion of like the findings of this investigation, like I do believe like this board of directors, like I do feel we're going to see like transparency here of like the findings of this investigation. I don't think this is going to be a simple one sentence press release of, you know, we have made our findings and blah, blah, blah. Like, I think you will get some substance, and obviously it will be like how deep it goes, because those are a lot of the interesting questions of what were the specific events that led to Vince McMahon's exit, as it was. Like, what was the pressure that he was up against? And was it him just realizing this was unwinnable, which is hard to imagine, or this was just sheerly this was almost it's a fascinating aspect to all of this of what led to that. Because, you know, in typical Vince McMahon's fashion, you would think like this guy would be the last one on the ship, no matter what the outcome is forecasting.
Absolutely. I think it's the SEC situation. I think it's that investigation that the company absolutely has to cut ties with him as a publicly traded company. So there's no weathering the storm on this one. There's no, well, this will blow over. No, the longer that you stay here, the worse that it gets. So I think that really was the thing that forced it. If those investigations didn't happen, as awful as the allegations were and as awful as what they kind of confirm about how aspects of that place were run, I don't think it was enough. I don't think it was enough to get him out. But I think that it becoming a criminal investigation with the SEC and these financial crimes, I think that's what really, there's no choice.
Just a few other news stories from today before we get into the Raw review. Numbers from Friday, SmackDown, unlike Raw, didn't really get the post SummerSlam bump. They were down in viewership and the demo, but still number one on television. So nothing to sneeze at with 2,093,000 viewers, down 4.5%, and the demo was down 5% at a 0.49. Where they really got hit was in 18 to 34, which fell 25% last week. It was one of their lowest 18 to 34 numbers, I believe, since May. Rampage, on the other hand, they were coming off that really low number the week prior, and they bounced back with a 25% increase in viewership to 468,000 viewers, fifth on cable, with a 0.15 in the demo. So they were up across the board. It was a big rebound for them the last week. Their highest viewership since the beginning of July. Demo wasn't like through the roof or anything, but at least stop the bleeding after last week. And then we also have the announcement from Vice TV, the confirmation that Tales from the Territories will be premiering October the 4th with the team that did Dark Side of the Ring, Jason Eisner and Evan Husney, as well as $7 Productions, led by Dwayne Johnson, who narrated the trailer that they put out. And this looks to be the shift of Dark Side of the Ring. There's been no word on Dark Side of the Ring proper resuming. Did you get to see this trailer at all, Brian? And what do you think about this concept, as there will be more wrestling content on television come this fall?
I haven't seen the trailer yet. I didn't get to catch it today. But listen, this seems like a great shift. I know that there have been people at least saying that, like, hey, this is a great shift from WWE's standpoint, because they're no longer going to be doing stories that happen within WWE involving WWE's, you know, key figures. I think that, you know, these are all happening pre-WWE. They kind of, their hands are a little, you know, free and clear of it. It's a way to sort of look at a different era before Vince McMahon, you know, moved it to the arenas and whatnot. But hey, there's a lot of interesting stories there. I think that they do a great job with that show. So, yeah. Curious to see what stories they tell out of it. But this new concept certainly protects the WWE IP, I would say.
They could have gone Tales from the Bar back when all these promoters were
all
running, you know,
the bars,
the local saloon where they'd pack them in, you know, Vince Sr. with Bruno headlining the local brewery down in New York City. So yes, that will be premiering on October the 4th, and Tuesday we'll get the numbers for Battle of the Belts and the whole A&E block. Have you caught any of these any of the A&E programming?
I have. I've caught portions of some. I recently actually, I didn't watch the whole thing, but I skimmed the Bellas one, and it's very interesting that apparently Bryan Danielson is a minor footnote within Brie Bella's life. They met and they fell in love, and that's all you really got to worry about. There's no other, they really know the larger influence in her life. That I found that particularly
It's funny because that's one I have not seen any of the Bella's one, but I've caught like bits and pieces of like the other one and several others. And it's amazing how many AEW people were given the go ahead to do sit downs. Like I've seen Jim Ross on these, Paul White, Billy Gunn's going to be on this DX one this weekend. So it looks like, you know, certain AEW talent, this was not one where they were not preventing them from doing this. I did see the Luger one on Sunday night. That was very interesting because sometimes Way and I will joke about when WWE puts out these documentary ones and just the footage they have, because they're just rolling on everything, like in between interviews, they've got you mic'd. I don't know if I've ever seen someone that was more focused upon than Luger as they're trying to talk about how difficult he was with fans and being on the road for the Lex Express, and pretty much to a person talking about how much of an ego this guy had in his active days. And then all of his problems that he endured during the latter parts of his life. And at the end, kind of painting this picture of somebody that, you know, went through a stroke and he's now in a wheelchair, and yet he seems to be as happiest now as compared to at a time when he pretty much had the world under his thumb. It's an interesting story. Like, you can look at Luger as this tragic figure, but seems to be one that, I mean, has kind of, you know, what religion is going to have a different impact on different people, and they're going to have different philosophies on it. But it seems for him that that was something this guy that is something he utilized to find peace in his life at the end.
That's definitely the one that I think I'm the most interested in checking out. That is such a, you know, there's tragedy.
They go pretty hard on him. Yeah. Like during the wrestling, like you just have person after person, like, you know, you have his people that back him up. And there was overall, I think, like a positive view of Luger by those interviewed. But during his wrestling days, like, it's pretty consistent. Like, everyone is talking about, you know, his limitations and his attitude. Like, it seemed like that was a consistent thread of everyone that's interviewed in this.
Yeah, I mean, that's always what you hear about the guy.
So there you have it. All your latest news and notes you can find up at postwrestling.com. And we're going to get into tonight's edition of Raw, which I guess would be our second episode of like a full Paul Levesque episode of Raw. And before we get into like all the segments and stuff, Brian, especially as someone with kind of your background working on the show, is there anything that is jumping out to you? It's still very early days here of the changes, but are you sensing little or big changes from what you have had a chance to see?
So here's what I will, I'll just maybe a thesis statement, just table setting here at the beginning.
Love it.
I think we've seen a lot of positivity around the change in Raw online. And I will say I watched SummerSlam and I liked most of SummerSlam. I will say, however, I think a lot of the positivity about the shift in Raw comes from people who watch Raw every week. And I think maybe have a lower standard because, John, thank you for doing this to yourself for the past decade. We're able to keep in touch with this because of the anthropological study you have done over the past decade, continuing to watch this show.
I have no idea what's gone on the world on Monday nights for the last 12 years.
Now, that being said, I think that there are, I think that the booking of the show is not as flat out kind of offensive as it maybe was a couple months ago, where they just clearly just had no concern or interest in like entertaining their audience. But I still think there are major, major problems with the way that they produce their television, the way they put their television out. And people can say it all day, 3 hours is hard. Yes, I think they've also gotten lazy. Go watch a 3 hour Raw from 6 or 7 years ago. Every match wasn't going multiple segments. They weren't doing the number of non-finishes that they do. They weren't just not advertising anything for the third hour. These are all things that have changed over the last couple of years. I think it'll take a lot more to fix those issues. And I think where Hunter's back is against the wall is that he spent years building his team and his roster, and most of them are gone, which has led him to, as we saw on Friday and as we saw on tonight's show, have to do some big returns that don't necessarily feel so like, I don't think there were people he'd be putting all his chips on in other if the situation were a little different, I'll put it that way.
Yeah, I would say for this show, like it seems, and again, we're pretty much basing this off of 2 weeks, and we're really going to need some time before we see like the true like philosophical ideas that Paul Levesque has, especially for your major main roster programs. Like, I don't think he's looking to just transplant what worked for NXT several years ago and put it on to Monday and Friday nights. But it does seem like there is more of a focus on putting matches together that are just better quality wrestling matches. Finishes, this guy is not Giant Baba in 1990 where we're going to strictly clean finishes like that. That is not happening. I did like the fact that they tried to introduce like this thread of what is going on throughout the show with, if you're paying attention to, the whole parking lot scenario and getting, something at the end. I wouldn't call it a payoff, but there was something at the end if you did stay right until the end. And it does seem like they are trying to at least piece together stuff for next week, setting up something for 2 weeks, which I can't remember the last time on Raw we had, hey, in 2 weeks, this match is going to be taking place. I mean, we're going back probably a decade before that long of a match was set up. So I think you are seeing little things, but I'm also not ready to draw any conclusions based off of 2 weeks of programming where, like, to your point, it's not like Paul Levesque was like slowly being, you know, in some ways he was being groomed for this role, but then it hit a brick wall and this has all come together very fast. You are suddenly tasked with overseeing all of the programming, all of the creative, and it's a lot on your plate that you're taking. And it's also, it's the top show on cable at the moment. Like, there is a certain level of maintaining that you have to do on top of this versus just, you know, putting a stick of dynamite into this, pardon the pun, and blowing this up.
I mean, I think if you look back, just as an example, remember that great SmackDown that happened because everyone was stuck in Saudi Arabia and Hunter had to throw together a show in a couple of hours and they brought up the NXT roster. And it was such a fun, fresh, exciting show because he could bring up the Undisputed. What was their name back then?
The Undisputed Era.
That's it. And
you had a lot of tools that
Daniel
were
Cole
just
versus Daniel Bryan on like no bill. He can't necessarily do that now. He doesn't have there's not that lever to pull. So, you know, I think giving him a little bit of credit there, at least, you know, he's not going into battle with the team that he prepared to do this with. But I think as we'll get in, and I think the car saga throughout the night, we'll talk about, but I think diving into this opening here, I think a lot of the larger structural issues that they're up against were very evident in the opening of this show, I would say.
Well, off the top, they announced that for the women's tag title tournament, we have brackets, and they announced the following teams, a number of these just, you know, people being thrown together, but this is the outline we have. We have Tamina and Dana Brooke, who would take on Io Sky and Dakota Kai later tonight. Alexa Bliss and Asuka against Nikki Ash and Doudrop. And then on the right side of the bracket, Raquel Rodriguez and Aaliyah against Xia Li and Shotzi. And then Natalya and Sonya Deville against NXT's Nikita Lyons and Zoe Stark. So that will be interesting if those signal call-ups for those two. For Nikita Lyons, I mean, she had experience before the tryouts last year, but she was just signed after those Vegas tryouts last summer. So, I mean, very new to the WWE system. And Zoe Stark is someone that has had a lot more experience. But we'll see if these are call-ups or they're part of the tournament and still considered NXT. But nonetheless, we at least got brackets here.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if that match happens on NXT as a way to sort of say, hey, watch NXT this week. There has ramifications for the main roster. And then maybe they shoot an angle that leads into some sort of story on NXT. But yeah, it would be interesting if they brought those two up. But yeah, time will tell.
Bayley, Sky, and Kai come out. These three do need some kind of a name here.
They need a name.
Yeah, it's a mouthful, as Bayley would get to later here. Very, very confusing, some of these names here. And Bayley says she's here to salvage this uninspired division, and she knows that people don't care about watching Becky play dress up every week or cheering for Bianca Belair. Belair would be nothing without Bayley, and they are bringing back the hunger. And this was one of those, like, WWE setups to a term where I hope to God the team name is not going to be called The Hunger.
I mean, listen, they've had worse names in this.
They really emphasized here.
But how will they spell it? That's always the big question.
Oh, yeah.
Two U's. Two U's, no E.
Bailey calls the fans sheep. They're idiots. Io Sky is a lethal weapon and then refers to Dakota Sky, but she catches herself. She says, I know I said her name wrong, and just played with it and had fun with it. And then Kai goes to take over when Alexa Bliss and Asuka come out with Bianca Belair. Bliss just says, you're not winning the tournament because you're going to have to face us. Belair's not done with Io Sky yet, and it leads to Bailey suggesting that the only conclusion to this conflict is for us to have a six-woman tag in 4 weeks' time at Clash at the Castle in Wales. I was like, okay, that is an option. And Belair accepts. She's like, yes, let's do it in 4 weeks' time. And then we had a big brawl. They went into the crowd and peaked with Alexa Bliss coming off the barricade with a high cross. But this was I cannot say for certain that they were sweetening this crowd, but WWE certainly not getting the benefit of the doubt for me, and they certainly felt to me like they were just riding some of the sweetening on this show in certain parts, which, you know, you do this long enough, you're going to get that skepticism.
Yeah, just that constant cricket sound seems to be happening.
Yeah, and there were times, like, organically, this crowd, like, got up for stuff in the show, mm-hmm. but it also felt like there's no way this crowd is reacting to this extent for just these very... very basic lines.
Right. I mean, I think part of, you know, I think on paper, you can look at this segment and say, okay, I see what this is. And ending with the brawl was a little bit more heated than I think these segments can kind of get sometimes. But the problem is that everything, at least for me right now in WWE programming, feels so phony and staged, and it doesn't feel lived in. And listen, we know this is fake. Every TV show you watch, it's all fake. When you watch a Marvel movie, it's fake. However, the people putting the story together try to do certain things to help you suspend your disbelief. And WWE just doesn't do that. The language isn't real. The delivery is pretty bad. The scripting, the production, it's very tough to actually buy in to what's happening. So this person says their line, and then this person says their line, and they fight because the paper told them to fight.
For many of them, Brian, like, this is the system that they only know. Right. So it's not something like of just coming in and snapping our fingers to here's a new playbook. It's like, for many of these people, this is the only playbook we've known, and it's been labeled the gospel in this company.
Absolutely. And you take someone like, you know, Bianca Belair. Has she, like, how many times has she cut an unscripted promo? Really? Like, how many times has she done that? And I think another thing that when it comes to WWE developmental, that's not great is that they're being taught how to deliver scripted promos. Who's teaching them how to deliver scripted promos? People who spent their entire career never delivering scripted promos. They bring in acting teachers for like a couple of days, but what? How is Terry Taylor going to tell you how to deliver a script? The guy never delivered a script. You know, Road Dogg was not handed scripts back in his day. I think unfortunately the performers are kind of set up to fail, but even if, you know, Hunter were to say, okay, you know, here's your bullet points, go out there, is that going to really do them much good? I think Bailey is very good. She has great delivery, but it felt like she was also very scripted, probably because she was with two people that needed that scripting and needed those bullet points to kind of get there. Again, it's nothing against the performers themselves. It's just, unfortunately, it's what this system is and the structure and how they've trained these people up to perform on television.
Yeah, it'll be something interesting to watch it's like so much of the system too is catered towards like that kind of scripted nature. I mean, it's kind of like the backbone of this writing staff is that like that's a huge function of what the weekly obligations are as well. Mm-hmm. Seth Rollins and Angelo Dawkins is our first match. The Street Profits are out in Cleveland Cavaliers colors, and Rollins misses the stomp immediately, and there's a cartwheel dropkick by Dawkins, and then Ford distracts, and this leads to this huge pounce by Dawkins, flying Rollins over the desk. Ford, after the break, gets upset. He grabs a chair, and it leads to him being ejected by the referee. Dawkins hits this incredible Topikon Hero with incredible height. Silencer for a two count, then hits a sky high for a big near fall after avoiding several stomps. And then Dawkins is sent into the steps, and Rollins misses yet another stomp, drives Dawkins' shoulder into the mat where he hits the pedigree, and that is the ultimate win for Seth Rollins, and hits another stomp after the win when Ford runs down, sending Rollins out. I thought Dawkins looked great in this match. I thought this, I actually preferred this over the Ford match from last week. I think Angelo Dawkins, you can see he has really gotten himself into like peak condition, and this was like a really fun TV match, I thought, and really great for Dawkins.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like with Riddle maybe coming back next week, it feels like maybe this thing between Rollins and the Street Profits is over, and hopefully this can be used as motivation for whatever happens next for the Street Profits, because I think there's so much with both those guys, and I'm ready for them to start telling a story with them. You know, let's really like shoot some angles. Let's really do some stuff here, because I think there's a lot of there's a lot there. I think they just have to give the audience something to sink their teeth into.
Yeah, I think we're way past the point of, you know, being overly concerned about like Dawkins' fate. Like, this to me is like somebody that is ready for, if the split happens, that he looks like he has primed himself for to be ready when they split up this team. The Mysterios are with Edge in the locker room, and Edge tells them that he has their back tonight, and he tells Dominic that last week when he speared him, it was just an accident, and Dominic is just staring a hole into Edge, and then shoves him, and Ray steps in, insisting it was an accident, and tells Dominic, I've known this man for 20 years, and Dominic shoots back, you've known me for 25, and Dominic can't believe that Ray is taking Edge's side, and off storms Dominic, leaving the locker room, and God knows where he ran into Rhea Ripley somewhere, but we would see Dominic later on.
I will give, they're telling a story, which I appreciate.
Yep.
It's time for Dom to do this turn. We need it, and I don't want him to turn and join the Judgment Day, because I don't think that sets him up for success. In my dream world, Logan Paul is a heel, and Dom turns to be with Logan Paul, because like, oh, he's young and cool, you know. When I think of the Dominic Mysterio character, what 23-year-old wants to be on the road with their dad? It's like, you made me famous and you put me on TV in like the least appealing way possible. It's time for Dominic. He's got to, you know, the Eddie Heat spots, I don't need that anymore. Let's get this guy just being a real dick to his dad. That's like, that's what everything's been set up for here.
Him and Rhea, that's the pairing. These two.
Hey, if Rhea leaves Judgment Day, then okay. I just don't want him to be a part of that.
We got a SmackDown promo, so this week we'll get a follow-up on Karrion Kross and then Gunther versus Shinsuke Nakamura. Kevin Patrick is with The Miz and Ciampa, and Ciampa explains that Harley Race believed in him, mentions how he died almost 3 years ago to the day in August of 2019, and he is dedicating his match to Harley Race tonight, and he shows off one of Harley's old robes, and this will be his moment with Race looking down on him and Miz in his corner. Lashley will feel his sacrifice, and he's already lost. So they have already made this feel like the most important United States title match in years.
Yeah, and also, I don't know. I feel we'll get into the result when we get, But no, Ciampa was great here. Ciampa is someone you can probably had bullet points, but he is a guy that clearly Triple H believes in. It's one of the few Triple H guys that are still around, and I think that you watch this show, and it's clear who's being set up for something big down the line. I think Ciampa, I think Owens, I think that these are people that it's fair to say that Hunter wants to get positioned. Because like you said, it's not going to change overnight. Maybe it's Hunter's really looking, okay, 2 months down the line, we're going to do a proper rebrand. We're going to try to bring people back. And I think it's positioning these people. And clearly Ciampa is one that he feels he has a lot of trust in.
Ezekiel against Kevin Owens. So this is kind of revisiting this feud that's just been going on forever, although they've kind of taken a pause with Kevin gone for most of the last month plus. And Owens just charges him at the bell, throws him into the post, into the desk, and then an apron bomb, and the referee is calling for help. We never get an ending to the match. It only goes a couple of seconds, and they explain that Owens has snapped. The officials are out. They take Ezekiel out on a stretcher, and this was more so just a big angle with Kevin Owens, and I wonder what this means for the future of the Ezekiel character on top of it. It was a serious injury angle, and your takeaway from here was Kevin Owens being primed for something significant and moving on from this with Ezekiel.
Yeah, I mean, everything I just said about Ciampa, I would maybe say the opposite about in terms of it doesn't seem like Ezekiel is someone that Hunter is that interested in protecting or making this a long-term project. So maybe he's going to he'll rest up until his beard grows back a little bit more.
Balor and Priest come out and they state that Edge and the Mysterios can't be on the same page and Judgment Day are not afraid of anyone. Fear isn't real. It's a product of your imagination, but danger is real. And Rey is going to find out that Balor is danger. And then Damian takes over and says that they're going to be in Toronto in 2 weeks and Edge hasn't wrestled on Raw in Toronto in what? 12 years, as Damian was clearly just, you know, perusing Cage Match before, because everyone knows off the top of their head that Edge last wrestled on Raw in Toronto in May of 2010 against Christian. This is an unbelievable stat that they brought up, but he makes the challenge to Edge for 2 weeks' time in Toronto so that Edge, who started Judgment Day, will now be ended by the group. So that that will be coming up in 2 weeks' time. And Ray's in the back. Edge says that, with Dominic, he's gone off. They don't know where Dominic is, and he offers to help out Ray, but Ray knows that his son is going to come through in the clutch. He's got this. So Finn Balor against Rey Mysterio, but no Dominic to be found at the beginning. And Ray hits a series of seated sentons, and then Balor takes over, and he does the Three Amigos and the Eddie Shuffle. I am with you, Brian. Like, I think, like, these Eddie spots have just become the go-to in, like, every company as well. Like, it has become just, like, a trademark spot for so many at this point. There's a wheelbarrow into a bulldog by Ray, and then the 619 misses, but instead he hits Priest, and this allows Balor to ram Ray into the post. We saw a sunset bomb sending Balor into the barricade, and then with the referee distracted, Priest trips up Ray on the edge of the apron, and this prompts Edge to come down, attacking Priest and taking him through the crowd and out of here. So that was Edge's night for the whole 3 hour Raw. He did two backstage promos and a brawl with Damian Priest. So that was that. And then we see a code red from Ray for a two count. 619 is cut off, and after missing the coup de grace, Rhea Ripley comes out with a bloody Dominic. And dude, this guy is barely conscious as he is just dropped onto the entrance area. And this distracts Ray and is hit with 1916 and the coup de grace, with giving Finn Balor the victory. So a lot to this, storyline wise and match wise.
And time wise.
Yes.
It's worth saying this is what, half an hour of the show?
It was like two segments and more if you're including
three segments.
Because you had the promo at the beginning, and then they went to a break after that. Then we went backstage. Yeah, this probably took up close to a half hour of the show.
Yeah. If you're a fan of The Office, this was the length of an episode of The Office.
I love your analogies. bring it down to earth for everybody.
I wanted, like,
the future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
That the 12-year thing was so funny because it wasn't like Damian said it with like such belief that he is obsessed with his former mentor, where he says, "You have not wrestled in Toronto in 12 years." He said, "What's it been? About 12 years?" They couldn't have scripted to say, "It's been over a decade," which is what you would say. You wouldn't say a decade. But I think that, you know, this was for me really indicative of what's the issue with the 3 hour Raw now. Rey and Finn Balor should feel special. It should be exciting. But when you send them out and it's not have an exciting match, it's fill three segments. And listen, I'm not knocking them. I mean, they had a perfectly fine, safe match. But it's, I, as an audience member, was really starting to, you know, question what else was on television at this moment. This was also the segment where my DVR caught up. So maybe that was part of how I was feeling as well.
Yes. I got your update of, oh no, I'm live. When you're live at, you know, 9:25, 9:30, it's tough. I tried my best to give you my strategy, tips, but, yeah.
So but hey, listen, we didn't see Dom get beat up. So hopefully.
That's right. That's right. He came out. You never saw the actual attack by Rhea Ripley. So that could play itself out in the weeks to come. Sarah Schreiber is with Dana Brooke and Tamina. But more importantly, this was the first time under the Paul Levesque regime that the 24/7 title has been seen. And Dana wants to enter this tournament to become a double champion. And Tamina has been one of her biggest challenges for the 24/7 title. Bayley and company walk in. They're not interested in her belt, nor is anyone else. And Bayley mentions being the first women's tag team champion. And Tamina is going to take them out in the tournament. Sky just says, I don't like you. And that was our setup here. Is the 24/7 title on borrowed time, Brian?
I don't know. It maybe this is just, I had to forget who said it on, but it feels like maybe over on SmackDown, they're setting up that like Sami Zayn's going to get it. So that he like feels like he fits in with the bloodline. That's sort of
he was
like
told he's got to start pulling his weight now because they've got all these championships. I guess that could be a way. You know,
that just feels like the natural extension of that. Otherwise, I think there's a lot of fun things you can do with that belt. I think I don't know. I think the time has passed for it. Probably it's probably a time to retire.
I don't know if it's a salvageable belt at this point, but more so interesting the fact that. You know, if it was at least brought here, it's not just being completely forgotten about. You've also got that SmackDown coming up in a couple of weeks in Montreal. So you certainly could do something with Sami Zayn on that episode in a few weeks. As you have, you know, Owens is going to be pretty popular in on that Toronto show as well, alongside mm-hmm. Edge with his first match on Raw in Toronto in 12 years.
In 12 years.
Yes. Io Sky and Dakota Kai against Dana Brooke and Tamina. So this is our lone tournament match that we had on the show. So this could be a very long, drawn-out tournament if we're going at the rate of one match per week. But I guess, you know, with SmackDown in there, we will get through these. The funny part is you would think, like, we're a month out from this clash at the castle that the finals...
You think the finals would be there.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know if I was these participants that I would commit myself to, let's do a six-woman tag that night. But we will see when these finals take place. Dana hit a big high cross to the floor onto both women. But when we come back, they've got the heat on Dana. Chance of a Bayley sucks from the crowd. And then Tamina gets the tag. Super kick and Samoan drop onto Io Sky. And Dana goes for a handspring elbow on the floor. But Bayley pulls Dakota Kai out of the way. So Dana just crashes into the barricade. Kai makes the blind tag that Tamina doesn't see. And Tamina is... I mean, when she sets up for this Superfly splash, she is doing it like it is the scariest thing on earth. It's like this woman's afraid of heights as she's like getting her balance. And then she came off in like slow motion as Sky was getting her feet up here to avoid the splash. Kai hits the running boot, setting up Sky to hit the top rope moonsault and pins Tamina. So Io Sky and Dakota Kai advance and they'll face the winners of Asuka and Bliss against Nikki Ash and Doudrop. That will happen next week.
I wonder what will happen. Who knows?
I think it looks good for Asuka and Bliss. That would be my guess here.
Yeah. Will it be two heel teams against each other, the team they're currently feuding with? Who knows?
Yes. Average match. I don't think it was like blow away or anything like that. Mm-hmm. You know, it started off the tournament. It was a match. I don't think necessarily the best opponents to showcase Io Sky and Dakota Kai. But then we go to the back, and this was... an interesting segment. So Kevin Patrick catches up with Kevin Owens as he is leaving the arena, and Owens is threatening Patrick if he ever comes up to him like this again. He knows exactly who he is, and he knows that there are more eyes on this show lately, and it's time to remind people that this is still the Kevin Owens show. So Kevin Owens citing Showbuzz Daily as the reason for Ezekiel's demise earlier tonight, and also going in the first hour where he knew that viewership would be high. But the more important thing is that in the background here, we've got this car has driven into a pillar, and you see Nikki A.S.H. and Doudrop standing outside of the car, and this is where your attention is completely divided during this segment. But something that was I think it was at the very least people were interested in what was going on here, and a reason to like have some kind of a thread through the show, which this represented.
Yeah, quite the thread and quite the payoff that we'll get to.
We will get
in
there.
The end. But it's just this weird, and again, I know that this is the company is in this weird spot and like it's this weird structure, but we trust our audience enough to follow this kind of subtle story in the background that we're not directly calling attention to. However, we feel like we have to hold your hand on every other thing, and we also don't think that you will mind if we throw an hour of commercials and video packages at you. It's a very interesting kind of dichotomy that they have with their audience.
How would you have like wanted to handle this? Like, should the announcers have been like calling this out? What's kind of the role in your philosophy of like the broadcasters of like what we're seeing? Should the broadcasters be up to speed and reflecting what we're thinking?
It's tough because I think that, and this is going to kind of jump a little bit ahead to what the next segment is, where the show almost, WWE just, they over-explain everything and they call attention to everything and they hammer every single point home, that when they don't bring attention to something that is so obvious, it just feels off. There's a moment later where some police officers run through the back of a scene and two characters look at them and the camera doesn't pan over to where the cops are running to. What a cameraman would naturally, like, if you have two things to stare at, AJ Styles casually walking through a frame and a group of police officers running towards an intruder, you're probably not going to focus your camera on AJ Styles. So I don't quite know what the right way to do it is. I don't know if there's a more subtle blink and you miss it kind of a thing that then spreads on social media. But when there's a minute long clip and there's clearly a car wreck in the background that no one talks about. I don't know. I think it's just the WWE logic at play.
Yeah. I just think, like, to your point about like so much where it's like you are hit over the head with every detail, that I'll take subtlety when they're going to offer it. And this was one case of where, you know, you do need to be engaged here and paying attention to something that's going on in the background, that, you know, it's kind of incumbent on you to be noticing something like that. So I thought it was like something different for a show that quite often it's like they are screaming every last detail at you, that this to me was a case of like something that, you know, you had to actively follow along with. So I didn't mind it, how it was presented. Dominic is being checked on by the trainer as Rey is standing by, and that takes us to the United States title match between Bobby Lashley and Ciampa, with Ciampa coming out wearing Harley Race's robe along with The Miz. And the match begins where Miz distracts, but Lashley then catches Ciampa behind him. Ciampa landed an inverted DDT popping off of Lashley's shoulders. They're trading big strikes. Lashley lands the spear, but then Miz puts Ciampa's foot onto the bottom rope. This prompts AJ Styles to jump the barricade and runs off The Miz through the crowd. Ciampa then rips off the turnbuckle, and this would set up a series of, well, at least one big false finish, because AJ and Miz would return right as Lashley is getting set for the Hurt Lock, and this distracts Lashley, but they explain that they never touched either of the participants, so therefore the match continues, and Ciampa has enough time to ram Lashley into the exposed buckle follows with a big near strike, and he's on top of Lashley for the near fall that the crowd bites on. There's a fairy tale ending that gets countered, and Ciampa applies the Gargano escape with Corey Graves yelling, "There is no escape for the Almighty," which led to Lashley immediately escaping the inescapable Gargano escape. He catches Lashley with Willow's bell, another big near fall, and then a big slam by Lashley, applies the Hurt Lock, crowd goes nuts, and Ciampa taps out. I thought this was a terrific match. I thought these two just did a fantastic job here. There's obviously more of an emphasis on doing some of these big false finishes, even kicking out of guys' finishers. That was certainly not a staple on television. That seems to be a lot more liberal use of. But man, this crowd really got into this match, and this was by leaps and bounds Ciampa's biggest performance on the main roster. And I would say, you know, better than some of his like final NXT stuff that he was involved in. So I thought this delivered in a big way.
I agree. I mean, I think they also did a great job of, in a pretty short amount of time, just 1 week, making this feel kind of important.
Yeah.
It's very rare that you ever hear people kind of talking about a Raw match a couple of days in advance or even the day of. It's something you see a little bit more with Dynamite sometimes, where like the card is kind of, you kind of know every match that's going to be on Dynamite going into it. And people are in the day are sort of talking about, oh, wow, this match or that, you know, and Raw doesn't really do that often. And this was one that was established last week. They're bringing up the Harley Race stuff. They did the video packages, and I think people were legitimately interested. Plus there's all the stories of Hunter's really high on Ciampa. So it's like, how could this go? And not just that, but as we saw in the match, I think the two of them were actually really well matched opponents. So definitely a step in the right direction. Again, it's not going to change overnight, but I think more of this would certainly be welcome. Just even, hey, set up, why should I tune back in next week? What happened this week that's going to make me want to watch next week? It's a step in the right direction. So I would definitely give this segment a thumbs up.
Yeah, I thought this was one of the best things on the show for all the reasons you listed of just making this feel important and, you know, just tying in this to me is maybe the widest gap, because 2 months ago, this is if Ciampa is even put in a spot like this, like being promoted for a week for a title match, I don't even think that would have been the case. It's a throwaway match where the outcome is signed, sealed, and delivered, and no one is believing in Ciampa. There's no Harley Race in the build up to this. There's no big focus on the US title. It's just a win for Bobby Lashley. And instead, like, they gave this story of what Ciampa's fighting for, which I think is always great for a match where it's like you're kind of, you know, forcing your audience to have an investment on either side to win the match. Like, there's something that each side is fighting for here, the guy's title and this other guy's mentor dedicating the match to him. So I just think sometimes adding like stakes that are involved that an audience can comprehend, it just gives, you know, substance to your match and caring about the winner. And I think this was 1000% would not have been the case a couple of weeks ago for a US title match.
Exactly. And the win meant something. You know, I think WWE is a lot of times so caught up in wanting to protect people. It's a combination of wanting to protect people, wanting to present who they think is star versus star. And you just get these matches where there's no finish at all, or the Balor, you know, Ray match earlier, there was a distraction, so the win doesn't the guy, he cheated, so like, you know, it is what it is. This was a great match between two people that were really out there to try, and when Lashley won, it felt earned. It felt like it advanced the story in some way. And listen, if we're gonna get to almost kind of like an open challenge sort of situation with Lashley, where he gets to have a lot of great matches with smaller opponents that showcase what he's really good at, while exposing some younger talent, while we, you know, not younger, but just fresher talent. And then we eventually get to a place where someone defeats him. Great. I think that's a lot of fun. And I think seeing him in those kind of showcase matches, is a joy to watch. If you're continually building up fresh challengers that can showcase, you know, kind of different sides of his strengths.
Came back and we have a shot of the Cleveland skyline as Jimmy Smith notes that this city has produced some great fighters. For example, The Miz. as they cut to The Miz and AJ brawling in the back during the break. I howled at this line. He said it so naturally, like he wasn't even saying it tongue in cheek.
I think it's also worth noting that, so this was the beginning of the third hour. And I think it's fair to say that Lashley and Ciampa was the main event of this show, because from 10 o'clock on, there was nothing advertised. Everything that had been set up earlier in the show, the U.S. title match, Balor, Mysterio, the first round of the women's tag title tournament, all happened in the first 2 hours. I think this company they were pretty much telling you, turn off this show now. There is nothing to watch from this point on. It was oddly deliberate that they didn't even at least like float the idea of maybe something will happen in the third hour you should watch. Everything they advertised was done at 10.
Clearly, you were focusing on The Office when they had Omos walking in the back with MVP with coming up next. So there you go.
It felt like Hunter, like backstage, was like, okay, 10 to 11, whatever you guys want to do. I'm leaving the building a little bit early. Oh, Omos wants to walk the ring? Great, cool. Go out there. Have a match.
So Omos took on the tandem of Andrea Gershio, who is a independent wrestler Mambo Italiano, who's actually one of his trainers was Lance Storm, so he's been wrestling a while, and Spencer Slade, who has been he's an international wrestling cartel guy that's been wrestling for a few years. He was the one with the headgear on. So Omos just ran through these guys, flattened Slade, and then a tree slam onto Andrea in a minute 43. So it was just a destruction by Omos. And this is one guy, Brian, that I'm very interested to see what the future is like for Omos. Can you get around just the big monster that destroys everybody? Like how far you can go with an Omos? He'll be an interesting one to watch, because this is the first time he has not been on for several weeks.
Yeah, I was curious to see if he would be on again. And when I saw him, I was pleasantly surprised. It's a big question. I think we've kind of seen him in singles matches. You've kind of already done the tag title run with him. It's kind of a big question mark what you do with the guy. I still am more of the opinion that he would be better just as someone's manager, someone's heater. I think he can go a lot farther in that role. I think pairing him with MVP is a good step in the right direction.
Next week, we're going to get a health update with an exclusive interview from Riddle. I'm glad they emphasized exclusive, like AEW don't have the rights to this interview. It's like WWE is going to get the exclusive next week. Kevin Patrick is with Rollins, who makes fun of Riddle. He's going to just deliver his usual message next week, and he is the gatekeeper of this industry. Riddle flushes his potential down the toilet, and if you don't believe me, then ask Dana White. He thinks Riddle's going to come and retire next week, or Seth is just going to have to Cody Rhodes his ass out the door, and Rollins is also going to have something to say next week. So there you have it. A fine promo from Rollins. Where are you at on this Rollins character? I was kind of down on it for a while, but I think the guy has really I think he's kind of found the character more now that he certainly has that confidence about it. I could do without like the cackling and all that, but I think it's such a staple, and I don't know if I'm in the majority of people that dislike it.
I mean, I think Rollins is a fantastic performer. I also, my assumption with the Rollins character has always been that he found out what Vince McMahon wanted to do, because for the longest time, this show really was being made for an audience of one. And for a lot of the heels on the show, it feels like their entire characters begins and ends at being annoying. That's it. That's their whole purpose for being is just being annoying, which is.
Yeah, you find a lot of success. Like if you can find that, like I think there's ones that are kind of keen. Like if you look at a Sami Zayn, a Seth Rollins, mm-hmm. a Miz, like they have found like what works, and it's been very effective for them.
But I even think with some of those people, they have a character, they have a personality, they have motivations, they have weaknesses. He's annoying. That's the entire personality. What are his motivations? Why does he act this way? What's the, he's got his catchphrases and he's annoying. So my hope is that under the new regime and with Hunter, who clearly believes in Rollins a lot, that we can start to flesh this character out a little bit more. Let's add some more shades. Let's figure out what his motivations are for things. what makes him act the way that he does. Because I think he is such a fantastic performer. And I think it's time to be able to tell like richer stories with him rather than just, I don't like Rollins, I don't like Riddle, and I'm going to laugh about it. Because that's very limiting from a storytelling standpoint.
Well, I would say that goes verbatim with Riddle. And it seems like they're almost calling it out now that this guy has become this caricature. And if you heard the promo he cut at SummerSlam, it did seem like they are trying to kind of get that aspect of his character out and flesh him out some more. And the fact that Rollins is calling him out for like his repetitive, same promo he cuts all the time kind of indicates that's where they want to take Riddle into more of a serious direction, which the character does need, I think, for the long term.
I think both of them need it. And honestly, I think these two could really benefit from having a really nice long-term story, which it kind of feels like they're doing by purposefully holding off this match from SummerSlam. They don't want to just be, oh, we'll be through the scene together in 2 weeks and we're doing the match. They want to tell a real longer-term story with these two. I think they're both so incredibly talented. Hopefully this allows them to raise both their games up and they come out of this feud, both of them a little bit more serious, because I think they're both fantastic talents.
Chad Gable and Dolph Ziggler, Cleveland's own Dolph Ziggler, comes out, and we start this off, and they're just having a wrestling contest here, with Ziggler getting the best of the Olympian. And Ziggler, I like the fact that they were trying something very different, but I think this tells you, like, this crowd was not into this at all at the beginning. Like, it was just, they're trained, I think, for not this kind of style of match and big stars. And even with the hometown guy and Ziggler here, it was like, it took a while. And then they kind of evolved the match into more of your traditional pro wrestling WWE presentation. Gable hitting the American automatic, the Chaos Theory, and then missing a moonsault off the top. And then he just goes to town on Ziggler's ankle, repeatedly applying this ankle lock and Ziggler trying to break free. At one point, his ankle gives out as he tries to set up for a super kick. There's a power bomb by Gable, goes back to the ankle lock, angle slam, but Ziggler lands on his feet, landing the super kick, and he pins Gable in his hometown in 6:33. So a new era here on Raw where the hometown guy gets the win. And then he escapes Otis's attack while still selling the ankle.
Yeah, it's the third hour. That's kind of
they didn't prepare you for this one. We didn't get any announcement about this ahead of time, but
Really tells you a lot when they don't tell you this match is coming up later in the show.
Yeah, it felt like this crowd was tired here, even with like Ziggler. But I think that also tells you like where Ziggler is on the pecking order. And this is, you're going to see audiences like they react to stars, and late in the show, it's like this didn't have them all on their feet. Next week, we get promos from both sets of teams for the women's tag title tournament. We hear first from Nikki and Doudrop, and then Bliss and Asuka, and they're cutting their promo in the haunted parking lot, because in the backdrop, we see all of the security and what they're dealing with, and then Bayley and company, who that's what I'm calling them, Bayley and company for now on, they interrupt Bliss and Asuka as security runs past them, and then I guess Aaron Sorkin is directing this, because we got the walk and talk here with Bayley as AJ passes them here. Thought though the West Wing was on here, as he was like, "What? We have all these ships crossing through the night, all these different characters that are interacting."
I appreciate it. You go back and you watch some Raws from 20 years ago. There's some intricate camera blocking happening backstage. I'm glad that's back. Get rid of the standing in front of a curtain and a TV with the Raw logo on it. Give me more of this. Give me a lot of people backstage interacting.
I like the fact that we just segued from one thing to the other. You've got the parking lot thing going on. Instead of AJ just doing the usual like walk, it's he passes by as coworkers would that work in the same area. And then it's teeing up the match. So our main event is AJ and The Miz in a no DQ match, with Miz wrestling in his My Balls Are Massive shirt that I am still awaiting to see a fan wearing one of these.
Listen, maybe this is Hunter, he wants to at least give some respect to Vince. Let's not completely wash him away. Let's keep some of the balls stuff.
This might have been one of his last t-shirt ideas. AJ, he is run into the steps. He brings out a table, but Miz stops him, puts the table back. The crowd is sad. And then Styles brings Miz onto the announcer's desk. Miz tosses him off of the desk over the barricade, landing on the floor. That looked like a fun landing. And then Miz starts using a kendo stick, and AJ takes control of the kendo stick. He lands a phenomenal forearm on Miz, but all of a sudden Ciampa, who's just come out of nowhere, yanks the referee out. Styles goes for a Styles clash on Ciampa, but then he eyes the table on the floor, and it leads to Ciampa being sent off the apron through the table, and then the phenomenal forearm is stopped when Miz blasts a chair at AJ into a skull-crushing finale, and Miz gets a two count, so a very big near fall here, and a kick out from the guy's finisher. Miz uses the kendo stick on AJ's leg, and then Miz gets knocked into a chair in the corner, setting up the Styles clash, and AJ wins in 12 minutes and 34 seconds. But then AJ, it's like 12, it's like 10:56. And this AJ must have like stood through the longest 4 minutes of his career. He's standing there and he's got to like subtly be concerned of this intruder that is in the audience who got to the front row. And there you see security removing Dexter Lumis, and he is taken away, and the announcers have to like semi-react to this without like, oh my god, is that Dexter Lumis? It's what's going on, like that very awkward like, oh, it's a shoot kind of reaction. And so Dexter Lumis is taken out. We've still got like 2 minutes left.
Yeah.
And dude, AJ is just in the ring forever. Like, you're waiting for someone to attack him, and then finally, like mercifully, this goes off the air. But AJ is just there forever in this ring. I don't know if they ended early the match, because this just felt like time stood still for the time the bell rang and then the show going off the air.
Yeah, it's first of all, I don't know if you could have an anti-pop, but I feel like that's what happened with Dexter Lumis. Like, clearly, like, they want you to have your focus on that area of the screen. Again, this is where I think WWE struggles with subtlety, because they can't really, like, do actual subtlety. Because I think if you're doing that here, it would be, well, if this were real, they wouldn't even put the camera on them. AJ wouldn't stop mid-ring and stare at what's happening in the crowd. So maybe it'd be better if they just like didn't show that, and it was just on social media. I don't know. But then when Dexter Lumis like comes up and you see his hair, and they announce, is that Dexter Lumis? No reaction from this crowd whatsoever.
And you probably had a crowd that was like thinking, you know, we've had these recent like returns and stuff like that. I'm sure many in Cleveland were thinking like Johnny Gargano,
My thinking about why everything was kind of so subtle throughout the evening, why you wouldn't do the more WWE thing of like halfway through an interview, you hear a loud crash and the camera runs over and, oh my goodness, this, you know, there's this car crash and you're kind of building up what's going on here tonight and building up the pandemonium, is I think a lot of people would assume it was Johnny Gargano. I was even expecting it maybe with everything with Ciampa going on, you know, on the show. You know, it's tough. I question this booking and bringing in Lumis. I just don't.
Do you think it gets into the trap at all? And I do feel like for a time, like AEW kind of got into this. Like it's an easy pop to like bring in someone new. And I think at the moment you're kind of training your audience. Like, tune into the show. You're probably going to get one of these returns. I don't know if Dexter Lumis would have been very high on my list, but we'll reserve judgment to see what they have planned for the guy, because it's a tough character, I think. Mm-hmm. But maybe they have this grand idea for him. But it almost does
also
feel feels like this is kind of a pattern that they're getting themselves into, and I don't know how deep you go of bringing people back, because a lot of them, like the quality ones, are not at your disposal.
Well, and I think that when it comes to AEW, I think a lot of people are questioning why is Tony Khan signing so many of these people? And I think that now I think we're really starting to see that really benefiting them, in that there's a lot of people that they signed that I'm sure Hunter would love to come back, that signed there and signed deals because, oh, well, Vince McMahon could be around for another decade. You know, it's better for me to go, you know, elsewhere. That, you know, again, I do question. I mean, I think the lack of a massive response to Dexter Lumis, who was, you know, he was a mid-card pushed kind of comedy character there at the end of NXT, really never showed up on NXT 2.0 at all. They had, like, if I'm not mistaken, they had the big wedding.
He came back for that, yeah.
And then that was the premiere of NXT 2.0, and then they never brought that back.
Right.
Pretty much wrapping up that story. And then he was never part of, you know, NXT 2.0 from that point on. And then you had Karrion
Kross. Well, he was doing the whole, like, it was him and Indy doing the stuff with Duke Hudson and Persia Parada. And then there was the releases happened, and they were just gone. So he was there for a little bit, yeah.
And then you saw on SmackDown with Karrion Kross, where he didn't necessarily get a massive reaction either. And that's not necessarily me knocking them as talents or knocking the audience for not knowing who they are, but they were never really portrayed as stars on the main roster. Dexter Lumis was never even on the main roster. And we all know what happened with Karrion Kross, with the way they handled him for a couple of weeks. So I would question bringing these talents in this way, that you're expecting there to be like a big shockwave or a big, oh my goodness, I got to learn what happens next. Not saying that you can't bring them back. I just question bringing them back in this way, as though there's such big names that it will be a shocking return for everybody.
Those two, like Kross and Lumis, these are ones that I feel it's going to be incumbent on your booking of them, that we look back and it's like, what a great pickup this was coming back. And this guy had a vision for these two that had played itself out, versus being, you know, if you put a Bray Wyatt on, place is going to go nuts for that first time. But I was going over the names that were released, and like, you're looking at them and like, I don't know how many are jumping off the page at you. And, and there's also like, this is a new vision for a lot of these characters that you do have on the show that you can play around with. Like, there is a lot of interesting parts that you have to play with already, that I don't know how much you have to go out there unless you feel the need for this surprise factor for the first couple of weeks.
And I think both of these talents as well would have benefited from more of a rollout in a reintroduction to the audience, where people can sort of build up some excitement for them. I think just they're here again is not, especially doing it back to back shows as well, I would say.
All right. Well, there you go. That was Raw. I do have to say that I do like, you know, certain changes that we have seen. Like, I have found it to be, I feel it's a much more smoother show to get through. I think this was like a step down from last week's Raw, but nonetheless, the Ciampa Lashley thing I think was excellent. I think the overall quality of wrestling, I think it's undeniable, has increased in this very short sample size we have, and that does make a difference for a show. But as you point out, like, I think the 3 hours, it's the 3 hours, and you might have all the great ideas in the world. I think it's really tough to, on any consistent basis, hit a 3 hour show that is just going to be perfectly digested and you're coming out of it wanting more.
I mean, I think it's possible to do a good 3 hour show. I think the problem is that I think they've kind of slid in some bad habits over the 10 years of doing a 3 hour show. It's going to take a long time to sort of reverse that and fix that. But I will say, everything that Hunter's done, I think they're all steps in the right direction. I don't think there's anything where I look at and I go, oh man, it was better a month ago. I think that they are moving in the right direction, and a lot of the stuff will just take time. You can't have long-term storylines overnight. It takes a long term. That's how it happens. And I think they're stepping in the right direction. So, I think that they are, it's not a guarantee they'll kind of fix all their issues, but I think that they're in a position to do so. And even though I, you know, obviously was kind of critical and I have my, you know, my feelings about the way they currently produce their TV, I am still kind of giving them the benefit of the doubt and not necessarily just assuming the worst this thing they set up this week, they won't follow up on it next week. Or, you know, in a week, maybe they just decide not to do this tag title tournament, or maybe Edge doesn't end up having that match. I think they at least are gaining that trust back. Right.
It's a great point that I feel just if, like, let's say they've got things mapped out through Survivor Series, okay? And they know where they're going for the September pay-per-view, the October pay-per-view, and November. Just like 3 months of, here are some of our key A, B, and C storylines. And just the fact that you would have someone committed to getting to that November like peak point, and you're not going to just disrupt things one week or just out of the blue, I think inherently your show is going to benefit from that consistency and just working backwards. This doesn't have to be you're planning things a year out, but just on a short term, and you stay committed and you have that kind of buy-in from your audience that, hey, you announce something, you're going to see it. I just think inevitably the show is going to be better received when you have week-to-week consistency and you know where you're going and can go backwards.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and the best form of advertisement that any sort of show or media or album or any sort of piece of entertainment can have is positive word of mouth and recommendation from a trusted source. So I think that the more that people give the show a chance, and the more that I think friends of theirs tell them, hey, it is actually getting better. And maybe even the more that, you know, some like Sports Illustrated or ESPN or something writes an article in a couple months of, hey, Raw's turning a page and here are the fresh new stars you should tune in and watch. You know, a lot of these are going to be gradual. They're going to take time. And I am excited to see where they get. And I wouldn't be surprised if in a couple months we see a big flashy, almost like rebrand around the draft of them kind of making the announcement of, hey, now's the time for the new WWE.
All right. We do have one super chat here requesting reboot Keep It 2000. Yes. A very well-remembered series with the great Nate Milton and Brian Mann. We have a few pieces of feedback from the forum, so we'll quickly go through those. And Tanise here from Georgia. Hunter loves his video packages. I know changes will come steadily, but the opening 20-minute monologues must go. They should have started with the tag tournament. Rehabbing Kevin Owens into a serious character is the right call. Rhea Ripley abusing Dominic is something I never knew I needed in my life until now. It should happen every week. Dexter Lumis is back, and the black and gold invasion continues. This new era of WWE has been competent so far. Take care, good people. We have Hernus from New York City. NXT Owens is back. DIY is coming back. Sometimes when you're looking for a submission, you have to do it yourself, said Corey Graves as Ciampa used the Gargano escape. The winners of this tournament, Sky and Kai, do you see them facing Sasha and Naomi to unify the titles? Do you think that is the big payoff to this tournament, is the return of Sasha and Naomi at the end of the tournament?
I mean, it's certainly one way to go. Yeah, you know, it's one way to go. I mean, I don't know if I necessarily would go that way. I think that there's better things for Naomi and Sasha to both be doing if they do come back that isn't necessarily being in this team. It sort of felt like, I don't know. It's not the placement I would put them both in personally. You could do it. You know, they technically never drop the belts. You know, it's a direction you could go.
Muggin writes, Raw has gone 2 for 2. The ongoing mystery throughout the night kept me hooked, and it paid off well with the return of Dexter Lumis. The in-ring action was strong, with Ciampa Lashley being the match of the night. Bayley's new group continues to flourish, and I'd bet Tegan Knox will fill in for the six-woman tag in Cardiff if either Asuka or Alexa will be removed in storyline. I also liked how they're booking matches in advance instead of doing the week-to-week planning. Overall, the Triple H regime continues with another solid outing. And then the last one here is from Nas, who says, if this show ended with the United States title match, this would have been a really good show. The third hour really brought the show down. Ciampa's promo was so good, he really won the lottery with Vince going. Kevin Owens matters once again. While I applaud them for trying to big up the women's tag, but other than Dakota and Io, no one cares for any of these teams. Another enjoyable show, very optimistic for the coming weeks. And I think that sentiment is with most people. Mm. I think there is an optimism that you can't ride forever, but I would say, like, thus far, I think there's been enough that people have a reason to continue that optimism with a program that has been, you know, it has been very tough on its fan base for a long amount of time. Mm-hmm. And now for the first time in their lifetime, they're seeing it in someone else's vision. But again, we are 2 weeks in, and I think it's ridiculous expectations that also come with that.
Absolutely. And I mean, I know that I might have been a little more negative on a lot of things on this show, but it's listen, I'm trying to be here and speak for the 3 million people that stopped watching the show over the last 5 years. And I don't think that just because, hey, some of the booking is a little bit better than it was a month ago. I still think there are large issues that, you know, we talked about that I think are worth bringing up and are the reasons why so many of those people stopped watching. So, yes, they are making progress. There are there are clear incremental changes that are happening. I don't know. We'll see. I think they're in a position to fix those issues. It's such a shame that Hunter, who clearly had spent many years preparing for this moment, doesn't necessarily do it. He doesn't get to do it under the conditions that he had been, you know, preparing for.
Well, that is going to wrap things up here on Rewind to Raw. But I want to thank you, Brian, for stepping in to join me. It's always great to catch up with you. And for those who want to catch more of your thoughts, your opinions that are out there, and whatever else you want to mention, what is going on in the world of Brian Mann?
I mean, no one wants my opinions. That's why I don't really tweet about wrestling or any of this stuff,
Brian,
that much anymore. But
we came to you. We got to hear from Brian.
Oh, well, I appreciate that. Check out, if you want wrestling stuff from me, Outside Interference, the YouTube channel that I have. Go check that out there. We've got Better Than You, the CM Punk MJF video I did, is about to cross 1.5 million views. So
wow.
Go help put that over the hump. And if everything goes according to plan, there'll be another video by before the end of the year. And I'm hoping there's some other cool stuff I can announce. But that's all I can say right now.
Ooh, like it. Very, very, very subtle. Very subtle. One time when we had Brian on, he did drop like a little teaser in the background, much like Raw taking from today. So you always got to be looking on in the background as well. But yes, Brian and his group.
There's no hints in the.
No car that's about to go through the wall behind you or anything like that. But yes, if you have not checked out the Punk and MJF video, the series chronicling the Kenny Omega Hangman Page program, very, very well received as the numbers, I'm sure, indicate. A viral sensation is one Brian Mann, and it's always great when we get a chance to chat with him for a bit. I will be back on Tuesday, G1 Climax podcast. Bruce Lord will be with me, so look out for that Tuesday afternoon for members at postwrestlingcafe.com. You can follow Brian at BrianMaxMan on Twitter, and I'm sure we will do this again sometime. Brian, thank you so much. Thanks to all of you in the chat room and for downloading the show, and that will conclude Rewind to Raw.